So it gives me pleasure to introduce Chohaku Okamura Roshi, who is an old friend of Berkeley Zen Center's. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Okamura Roshi is the founding teacher of the Sanshin Zen community in Bloomington, Indiana. He is a student of Kosho Uchiyama Roshi and is continuing the practice that he cultivated with Uchiyama Roshi at Antaiji and then at Pioneer Valley Zendo in Western Massachusetts and now in the wilds of Indiana and everywhere that he goes. His practice, in many ways, his practice is the practice of translation, translating the texts and work of Dogen and other ancestors and his teachers, and translating the essence of Zen to us here in America. And it's rare. We don't have many Japanese teachers in this at this point in time who have the skill and the understanding of the tradition and the understanding of us in the West. So we're grateful for his works. Today he's going to be talking about, from his book, Living by Vow. He also, you may have seen others of his books, Realizing Genjo Koan, Dogen's extensive record, also Opening the Hand of Thought, which is the work of his teacher, Uchiyama Roshi. It's a lot of books, and that's what you get when you translate day in, day out for 30 years or more.
Yeah.
When I met Okamura Roshi in outside Kyoto in 1989, the practice that he's doing now in Bloomington was already that form of the day, that form of practice was already well established. So today we will have a lecture in the morning. And then you're welcome to come back for a lecture in the afternoon, which I think is at 1:40. I will, after Okamura Roshi is gone, I will say something about Donna, not to embarrass him. But now we can just listen and enjoy.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I'm very happy being here this morning again. This time, Andrea asked me to talk on my book, Living by Vow. So, and she asked me in the morning, I should talk about Bodhisattva Vow as an intention and attitude. And in the afternoon, I'm going to talk on the meal chant. So now I'm talking about Living by Vow. This book, I didn't bring my book, but my book is in here. I stopped bringing, you know, carrying books. So all my books are here now. As I wrote in the introduction of Living by Vow, contents of this book are based on my lectures at MZMC or Minnesota Zen Meditation Center. Minnesota Zen Meditation Center was founded by Katagiri Dainin Roshi. And he passed away in 1990. And they didn't have a teacher for 3 years. So they asked me to come to be an interim head teacher for 3 years. And when I accepted that invitation, I made decision that I follow Katagiri Roshi's style of practice. I didn't want to change. I know if as an interim teacher, if I change, you know, after me, Katagiri Roshi's disciple had to change it again, and I don't think it's a good idea. So I tried to follow Katagiri Roshi's style of practice, and I knew his style of practice, and I knew it's different from my style, my style and my teacher's style, Uchiyama Kosho Roshi's style. Uchiyama Roshi put emphasis on just sitting, and at his temple named Antaiji, we had a 5 day session every month except February and August, because it's too hot and too cold. Mm-hmm. And even daily practice, we didn't have chanting. We sat from 5 to 8, 3 period, that's all, and we had breakfast. We never had a morning service. And during session, we didn't have work period, lectures, or chanting, or doksan, anything, nothing but sitting. So, Antaiji monks had a bad reputation that we couldn't even chant the Heart Sutra without looking the sutra book. But I loved that kind of practice. But when Uchiyama Roshi retired in 1975, I went to Zuyoji in Shikoku. And the abbot of Zuyoji was Narasaki Ikkō Roshi. And Narasaki Ikkō Roshi and his brother and the current abbot of Zuyoji, Narasaki Tsugen Roshi, practiced with Katagiri Roshi at Eheiji, and their teacher was Hashimoto Eko Roshi. So the practice at the Yoji and Katagiri Roshi introduced to this country is the same kind of practice. And when I practiced at the Yoji only for 6 months in order to get a qualification as a teacher, because at that time I was going to Massachusetts, and to get a visa I need the qualification from the Sotoshu. That was the only reason I went there. And when I was practicing there, I was happy first 7 days. That was during, what is the word? I forget the word.
Tangaryo.
During Tangaryo, I could sit all day. But after Tangaryo is over, you know, they had many forms and ceremonies and rituals, and they didn't sit so much. It's kind of very different. And I was not happy. So from the very first day, I started to count how many more days I have to be here. I think usually they sit two periods in the morning and one or two periods in the afternoon, in the evening. But often evening zazen was cancelled to study the forms and the ceremonies. So I knew that kind of practice, and I knew I didn't like it. So to accept invitation from MZMC and decided to follow Katagi Roshi's form, style of practice was a big challenge to me.
Yeah.
It's a big change. Before that, for 20 years, I really following Uchiyama Roshi's style of practice. During session, I did nothing but sitting. But when I started to teach at MZMC, you know, during session, we had chanting and audio cues, and I need to give lectures and work period and doksan, and I have to do it as a teacher. That means I cannot complain about what I was doing. When I was a young training monks, I could complain. I didn't like that. So when I started to teach at MZMC, I tried to find a common ground of Uchiyama Roshi's style of practice and the Katagi Roshi's style of practice. And of course, there are, very stable common ground. Actually, Hashimoto Eko Roshi, the teacher of Katagi Roshi and Narasaki Ikko and Tugen Roshi, and Saoki Roshi were very close friends. They practiced together under the guidance of Oka Sotan Roshi, and also Kishizawa Ian Roshi. Those three important Soto Zen teachers practiced together at Shuzenji, is a monastery in Shizuoka, and abbot was Oka Sotan Roshi. So they are all connected. That was one common ground. But Sawaki Roshi and Hashimoto Roshi were very different and very good and close friends. They both put emphasis on Nyohoe Okasa Owarakusu. So in Sawaki Roshi's lineage and Katagi Roshi's lineage in Japan, we saw Nyohoe. And in this country, even Suzuki Roshi's lineage adapted the same style of sewing. So there is a common ground, but I need more deeper common ground. And I remembered that Uchiyama Roshi put very much emphasis on Bodhisattva vow. As I said, we almost never chant, but before and after Uchiyama Roshi's lectures, we chant. I think usually in Soto Zen centers, before the lecture, we chant the verse of opening sutras, and at the end, after that lecture, we chant the four Bodhisattva vows. But Uchiyama Roshi changed. He asked us to change both before and after lecture four Bodhisattva vows. So, Bodhisattva vows, four vows, only kind of a verse or chanting we did at Antaiji regularly. And, Katagi Roshi also put very much emphasis on vow. And when he established MZMC, he named his temple as Gansho-ji. And this Gansho came from one of the definition of Bodhisattva, what Bodhisattva is. Gan means vow, and Sho means living or be born. So Gansho-ji means temple of living by vow. So when I started to teach at MZMC, first I talked about four Bodhisattva vows. I thought that was the common ground of all of our practice in Dogen Zenji's tradition. So, first thing I taught that in Minneapolis was four Bodhisattva vows. And this is really strange vows to me. The first vow is beings are numberless. We vow to save them. Some American people don't like that this was save, so change it like a free them. Was something like that. But this is a translation of Japanese or Chinese expression, Shujo Muhen Seigan Do. Shujo Muhen Seigan Do means beings are numberless, living beings are numberless, means infinite. And we vow to save them means we vow to save them all. If beings are numberless, there's no time we can complete this vow. So this vow is really endless. This vow cannot be a goal. And other three is the same. You know, delusions are inexhaustible. Then how can we put end to them? And Dharma gates are boundless means Buddha's teachings, Buddhist teachings are really limitless, but I vow to master them completely, and it's not possible. And Buddha's way means Buddha's awakening. Buddha's awakening is unsurpassable, means there's no way to go there, but we vow to realize it. So our vow is kind of a strange thing. We vow to accomplish something we cannot accomplish. You know, I think clever people cannot be a bodhisattva. You know, this is really kind of a strange vow. We vow to do something we cannot do it. This is really nonsense in our common logic. But I think this is a very important point. That means our vow is endless, no way to accomplish. So that achieving the vow is not the goal or something we need to reach. That is, in our common logic, it's a nonsense. But as a practice or a bodhisattva practice, this is a really important point. That means we vow to do something we cannot achieve it. That means these vows are not the goal, but this vow is our direction. And toward that direction, we need to take each step, each time, each day, what we can do, because anyway, this is not possible to achieve it. Not to achieve it is not a negative thing. It's a matter of course. So we don't need to be to feel guilty, or to be shameful, or to be small. Even we cannot practice and achieve so much. There's no such measurement how much we achieve, because if we compare with the infinite, whatever we achieved is limited. So we don't need to feel weak and guilty. But no matter how much we could achieve, we cannot be proud of it. So we need to be free from our self-judgment or evaluation. I cannot be proud I have been, you know, so much. And I don't need to be, to feel, you know, sorry about I couldn't do so much. But important point is I do what I can do at this moment, step by step. You know, these vows are for all bodhisattvas, not only particular bodhisattvas. And I see many people who were opesa or rakusu. That means you have already taken this strange vow. I'm sorry about that. But, you know, each person has different capability, different like and dislike, and different, you know, background. So in order to walk this direction of endless vow, we need to take particular vows. Each person needs to take particular vows that we can accomplish in this lifetime with joy. So there are two kind of vows. One is both four bodhisattva vows, that is called Shigu Seigan, that means general vows for all bodhisattvas. And based on those all bodhisattvas vows, each person needs to take the person's particular vow, what I want to do in this lifetime using this body and mind. And we need to find something we can enjoy. And in the case of Uchiyama Roshi, his personal vow is to sit thoroughly and share this zazen with younger people or next generation and continue this practice. And also his second vow is writing a text about the meaning or significance of this zazen practice for modern people. I mean, there are, you know, a huge library of Buddhist scriptures, and particularly in Soto Zen tradition, Dogen Zen's writing was very foundation. But all those, you know, scriptures written in Sanskrit, Chinese, or Shobogenzo written in Japanese, is difficult to understand. In order to understand them, we have to really focus on studying. Only scholars can do that if we, you know, want to practice instead of devote our lives to just studying. That was my first kind of a problem when I was a university student. I liked studying, and yet I wanted to practice. And while I was studying Buddhism, I had reached certain point where I had to make decision whether I had to become a scholar or practitioner. If I wanted to become a Buddhist scholar, you know, first thing I had to do is studying languages and studying Buddhist teachings in different scriptures. And I thought it took my entire life and no time to study and practice. But what I really wanted to do was practice. To me, at that time, to me, studying to become a scholar is like studying or reading recipes. Reading recipes without cooking or tasting. but I wanted to learn how to cook and how to taste the Dharma and share the nutrition with other people. To do so, I had to make choice to become a monk or a priest. That's why I became Uchiyama Roshi's disciple. So at that time, I already made a choice. But when I started to practice Atan Taiji with my teacher, you know, this study, this practice of just really just sitting, I, even though I didn't want to, you know, study the recipes, but when I really started to practice, I found that it's not possible to practice without knowing any recipes. You know, another practice we have to do at Atan Taiji was cooking. You know, practitioners in turn prepare meals. And I knew that when I was a student in Tokyo, so I tried to learn how to cook using some cookbook. And that was really helpful for me. If we know nothing about recipe, it's very difficult to cook. Buddhist practice or Zen practice is the same thing. If we know nothing about Buddhist teaching or Zen teaching and just start to practice in a monastery, it's very difficult. And many people, I know at least some people, just quit because what they had to do at the monastery was different from what they kind of had a fantasy about Zen practice. So in order to practice, actually practice and cook and taste the Dharma, we need certain knowledge and understanding of this teaching and of Zen's teaching. And it's really difficult to study those scriptures and texts in the original languages. So, you know, the scholars' works are really helpful for us practitioners to have certain understanding. So, in that sense, scholars, work for, you know, reading recipes and putting everything together and make it accessible for practitioners is really meaningful, but I don't think that was what I wanted to do. So each person, if they really want to devote their life to studying Buddhist text, you know, that's a one way of practice based on their vow. And my vow was different. So, Uchiyama Roshi's style of practice and Katagi Roshi's style of practice are both based on Bodhisattva vows. And if we want to do, you know, those that really just sitting, like Uchiyama Roshi, that should be based on Bodhisattva vows. And if we want to do, you know, practice more with more formality, then that must be the that person's vow. So in whatever actual style, actual concrete style of practice we choose, that should be based on the same vows as Bodhisattvas. I think that is very important point. Otherwise, you know, otherwise, like when I was young, I went to the Yoji. I didn't like that kind of practice, so I make a kind of a judgment. This is not true practice or a genuine practice. You know, Sawaki Roshi and Uchiyama Roshi's style was, you know, genuine practice, but they are not genuine. That is not the right thing to do. but often we have special thing when we are young. Something we learned, studied fast seems genuine. And other style or practice might be something fake or something inferior. So my practice at MZMC, following Katagiri Roshi's style, was a really a great opportunity for me to become free from my clinging to my own style of practice. So this is a really important point. You know, because of my experience at MZMC, after I finished my term there, Japanese Soto School asked me to work for the newly established office named Soto Zen Education Center. The task of that center was to make a bridge between Japanese Soto School and American Soto Zen centers. And also, you know, at that time there are not so much interconnectedness among the American Zen centers, because there are different lineages and they didn't have so much exchange. So one of the tasks of my office, as I was a director, I have to travel between Japan and America and Zen center, many Zen centers within this country. And I had to, you know, practice and talk with many teachers from different lineages, and they have different style of practice. So my experience at MZMC was really helpful for me to interact with those teachers from different background without having this kind of a prejudice or discrimination. My style is best and they are not so good. That kind of concept is really a difficult thing to, you know, overcome. So that was why I started my teaching at MZMC, to return to this common ground of all Mahayana Buddhist practice, that is Bodhisattva vows. Well, I don't have much time to talk about the book, but I'd like to introduce Katagiri Roshi's poem that was very helpful for me when I started to teach at MZMC. And this poem is about four noble truths and Bodhisattva vow. This poem appeared in the section entitled Katagiri Roshi's Poem on Vow. The title of the poem is Peaceful Life. Peaceful Life. Let me read the entire poem first. Being told that it's impossible, one believes in despair, is that so? Being told that it is possible, one believes in excitement, that's right. But whichever is chosen, it does not fit one's heart neatly. Being asked what is unfitting, I don't know what it is, but my heart knows somehow. I feel an irresistible desire to know what a mystery human is. as to this mystery, clarifying knowing how to live, knowing how to walk with people, demonstrating and teaching. This is the Buddha. From my human eyes, I feel it's really impossible to become a Buddha. But this I, regarding what the Buddha does, vows to practice, to be resolute, and tells me, yes, I will. Just practice right here, now, and achieve continuity, endlessly, forever. This is living in vow. Herein is one's peaceful life found. I think this is a really wonderful poem. And the first part is about the truth of suffering. You know, being told whether it's possible or impossible, or light or wrong, or great or not so good. That is a kind of human evaluation. And when we are young, we are told that whether we are good boy or not good boy, when we do something good for them, they told me I'm good boy. But if I did something wrong for them, they think it's not right. So that is how our system of value is built up within education. In the beginning, within the family, from my parents, and after I started to go to school, from teachers or the books I read, or from the entire society, I was always told, you are good boy or not so good. And that experience create my picture of the world and system of value. And that is a kind of a karma, because I was born in Japan in certain time, soon after World War II. You know, my system of value was made at that time, basically. And it was very difficult practice for me to become free from that kind of system of value made by my experiences within family or school and societies. And we usually think that is me, and that is my idea or my thinking, my system of value, and I using that already established before I was really matured, I judge other people or other things. That is how we, basically how we live in human world. And that is, in Buddhism, that is called karmic consciousness or karmic condition. And in order to be a bodhisattva, we, not in order to be, but when we feel, you know, something not fitting, when we have a question about those evaluation, I was taught by, you know, parents, teachers, and society, I think we become bodhisattva. That means we become a way seeker. So we try to find the deeper meaning of life, or a broader way of viewing things, become free from our ready-made way of thinking and doing things. And that is in our actual life, we call, or in Buddhism called bodhicitta, or way-seeking mind. And Katagiro said in the second part of this poem, being asked what is unfitting. Then we have we started to question about, you know, the message or education from the society. We don't know what is wrong, or why I have a problem with this. But somehow we have to deepen our questions. That is the process of our studying. And Katagiri said, I don't know what it is, but my heart knows somehow. I feel an irresistible desire to know. Somehow we feel, at least I felt when I was a high school student, I felt like I was imprisoned within this, you know, how can I say, like a cell in the prison. That is where I was born and educated. And I wanted to go outside, but it's really difficult. That is almost like I had to drop out from the kind of a mainstream of Japanese society. But somehow I wanted to be healthy. You know, at that, when that was the 1960s, you know, many people are like me. And in this country, those young people are called hippies. And somehow I didn't feel, you know, I wanted to become hippies. That's something not healthy to me. So I tried to find a kind of a healthier way, but drop out from that, you know, money-making machine. And that was when I had a chance to read Uchiyama Roshi's, you know, book. And I really feel fortunate to have connection with this way of life. That is, Saki Roshi and Uchiyama Roshi that came from Dogen Zenji. And the Dogen Zenji teaching is a part of Mahayana Buddhism, and also the origin of this tradition is Shakyamuni Buddha. I really feel I was fortunate to have this connection. So I could be free from, you know, Japanese society, but I can be healthy. So, you know, this desire to know who we are, what is a healthier way of life, when we feel something not healthy in our daily lives in the society. And Katagiri continues, as to this mystery, clarifying knowing how to live in a healthy way, and knowing how to walk with people, not by myself, not it's not my personal individual way of life, but this healthy life should be together with all beings, at least according to Mahayana Buddhism. You know, beings are numberless, we vow to save them. I don't like this word, to save, but original word for this English translation, save, is to cross over. Means there is a river between samsara and nirvana, and these are called this shore and other shore. And this crossing over from this shore of samsara to the other shore of nirvana is what this word do means. So I'm not sure if this word save is a right word or not. To help you know, all beings to cross over this boundary between samsara and nirvana. That is bodhisattva practice and Buddha's practice. So here Katagiri mentioned the cessation of suffering after we reach the other shore, that means become Buddha. what is the activity of Buddha? Is to share what we or Buddha accomplished. If he didn't, actually, the very origin of vow in Buddhism was, Buddha stood up from his sitting under the Bodhi tree and walked to the deer park to teach those five practitioners. That standing up from his sitting is, I think, the original point of vow in Buddhism. So as a Buddha's children, we should follow his example. That means we need to sit under the Bodhi tree, but somehow we need to stand up and go outside and share this teaching and practice with others. That is a cessation of suffering. So cessation of suffering is not really simply sitting. Of course, we need to sit, and we need some people who really focus on sitting, but we need other activity also. In the final part of this poem, Katayiro says, "From my human eyes, I feel it's really impossible to become a Buddha. This is a matter of course. That is why our vow is endless. You know, if we think within this lifetime, there's no way we accomplish these four vows. So our vow is really endless. But this I regard what the Buddha does, vows to practice. We vow to practice, to aspire, to be resolute, determined, and tells me, yes, I will." You know, this word, "yes, I will," is the saying all of us have to say during the Jukai ceremony. When we receive the precept, you know, the teacher read, recite each of the precept, and we are asked, "Do you strive to observe this?" And we have to say, "Yes, I will." So you have already said, "Yes, I will." That means we agree to, continue this practice rest of our lives, or even after our death. Just practice right now, right here now, means because this is not a goal we can achieve, what we can do is only right now, right here, at least this one step. And he said we need to continue. So moment by moment, this moment and this activity right now is only actual practice. What we did in the past was already gone. So we cannot be proud of how much I accomplished. Or we don't need to regret that I didn't practice so much or I did some mistakes. But each moment, right now, right here, we are all completely fresh. And we need to do something with this fresh mind. And this is what is called beginner's mind in Suzuki Roshi's teaching. So we need to be a beginner in each moment. That means we need to be fresh each moment. And yet the goal is still in the future. It has not yet come, so it's not reality. The real thing is what we are doing right now, right here. So we just be attentive and mindful what I'm doing now. And this activity of this moment take us to the next step. And that is when in the next moment that is the only present actual moment. What I'm doing now is already in the past. So this is how we practice step by step, moment by moment, or day after day. Just practice right here now and achieve continuity. Endlessly, forever. This is living in vow. This is the Bodhisattva way of life, led by vow. I said the name of Katagi Roshi temple was Ganshoji, living by vow or living in vow. That is the opposition of ordinary living beings' way of life, that is Gosho. Gansho and Gosho are opposition. Gosho means living pulled by our karma. Instead of being pulled by our karma, karma means our past experiences and conditions. Instead of being pulled by karma, we are led by vow. That is the difference between Bodhisattva and common way of living beings. And finally, Katagi Roshi said, herein is one's peaceful life found. So this Bodhisattva practice led by vow, not by our karma. Karma is so our conditioned thinking or idea or desire. So in order to do so, we need to be free from our karma. And we have to do our fresh start at this moment, right now, right here, as a Bodhisattva. Bodhisattva, that means how to take even one step toward that direction. That direction means being a numberless, I'm about to say thing, or Buddha's awakening, or Buddha's way is unsurpassable, we vow to realize it. Well, it's already 11:15. Do you have any question or comment? No question, good. Please.
I just wanted to thank you that, things came into focus very clearly for me, and the words that stayed with me, and what you said are, in practice, no evaluation, just rededication.
Right.
And that is like the best understanding I've had of the Bodhisattva vows, the impossible vows. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.